It's time to breathe easier this allergy season with Breathe Right Nasal Strips. With instant nasal congestion relief for up to 12 hours, you can spend your time on your terms, not on your noses. Stuffy nose from outdoor allergens? No problem. We got you. Allergy season just turned into stripping season. Instant relief from nasal congestion anytime, anywhere. Need more convincing? Click the banner below and get a free sample. Breathe Right. Get your strip on. Use as directed.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
I'm Dr. Fiona Lovely, and this is the Not Your Mother's Menopause podcast. I'm taking the taboos of menopause and perimenopause and bringing light to the dark. No bullshit, no shame. It's time for us to gain a new paradigm in female health, out with the old and in with the new, and I'm bringing fresh perspectives from someone in the arena. I've been practicing women's health for nearly 20 years, and I'm spilling the tea on what it means to live at midlife, knowing that the best is yet to come. I'm sharing my Gen X approach to living through this transition, sassy, a bit sweary, and always honest. Tactical tips and instantly usable information is my aim. I hope to make you laugh and that you learn something new that helps you embrace the change. Together, we bring power to the peri. Onward to the podcast. Hey, hey, Dr. Fiona Lovely here, and this is the Not Your Mother's Menopause podcast, and I have such a fun conversation to share with you today. Recently, I had the pleasure of interviewing Jennifer Chesick, who wrote a book called The Psilocybin Handbook for Women. Now, if you don't know what psilocybin is, it is the active ingredient in magic mushrooms. So I am going to be talking to you today about psilocybin and how it can work well for women. Now, she and I had a really interesting conversation, and I have, this is a bit of a passion project for me. I like to learn about how we can expand the frontiers of our brain and our function, and it turns out that there is actually a role for psychedelics in that. There's lots of really interesting research that's going on in the United States and around the world, actually. Johns Hopkins in the US are the ones that are spearheading that, if you will, and just fascinating, fascinating research. So, I want you to try to disconnect the part of your brain right now that's making this about, oh, that's a drug I need to avoid. I want you to think about the plant medicine involved here. It is my belief that we have plants on this planet that we have evolved alongside as human beings. The plants have evolved, we have evolved, and that we have a role for each other. And there's a really interesting conversation to be had about that, about Mother Earth and the plant medicine that she bears. And it was part of our conversation, me and Jennifer Chesick, and we really wanted to talk about the ability of the mushrooms to expand the mind. So it turns out mushrooms can change our beliefs, and we get sort of clamped down, and this is especially true at midlife, on these stories and experiences that we have had. And so with that, the psilocybin acts to allow us to disconnect from the ego for a period of time and just experience the moment. And I think that is really powerful medicine. I have experienced it myself. I think it was extraordinary to my own evolution. And so I want to talk about it. And that's why I brought Jennifer on to the show. So she and I talked about kindness and compassion for the caregiver that can come through the experience of psilocybin. Now, keep in mind, there's different dosages you can do with psilocybin, and I encourage you to speak to somebody locally that can help you with this. But the microdose experience is like a tenth of a recreational dose. And then there's the recreational dose, and then there's the hero dose. And then there was something that she referred to as a museum dose, which I'd never heard before. So please listen in for that information. But one of my favorite moments was when Jennifer talked about the oceanic boundlessness that happens when you are having a psilocybin experience. Listen for that moment to come in. Anyways, we talked about the entourage effect, which again plays into this plant medicine ideal, etc. We talked about how at perimenopause, women who have had ACEs or adverse childhood experiences, there's a whole body of research that's been done on ACEs, women who have had adverse childhood experiences have increased menopausal and perimenopausal symptoms. Fascinating, right? And that the psilocybin gives us a door into allowing that trauma to drop away. And that's probably one of my favorite things about this conversation, about the psilocybin conversation, is that it allows us a way in to a different way of thinking without having to spend 25 years in therapy reliving every miserable moment of our lifetime. So there is the potential for that. Very, very cool. It was a great conversation. I hope you'll enjoy it as much as I do. Please allow me to read the bio for Jennifer Chesick. Jen Chesick is the author of the Psilocybin Handbook for Women. She's an award-winning freelance science and medical journalist, editor, and fact-checker. And her work has appeared in several national publications, including the Washington Post. Chesick earned her Master of Science in Journalism from Northwestern University's Medill. She currently teaches in the journalism and publishing programs at Belmont University, leads various workshops at the literary nonprofit The Porch, and serves as the managing editor for the literary magazine Shift. Find her work at jenniferchesick.com and follow her on socials at Jen Chesick. I really can't wait to hear what you guys think of this conversation. I loved it from one end to the other. Thank you for listening as always. And before we get to the interview, let's just take a moment for our sponsors.
It's time to breathe easier this allergy season with Breathe Right Nasal Strips. With instant nasal congestion relief for up to 12 hours, you can spend your time on your terms, not on your noses. Stuffy nose from outdoor allergens? No problem. We got you. Allergy season just turned into stripping season. Instant relief from nasal congestion anytime, anywhere. Need more convincing? Click the banner below and get a free sample. Breathe Right. Get your strip on. Use as directed.
Welcome to the Not Your Mother's Menopause podcast. I'm Dr. Fiona Lovely, and I'm thrilled today to have author and journalist Jennifer Chesick on the podcast with us. And Hamish has just joined us, which is one of my cats. He wants to have the mushroom chat too, Jennifer.
Absolutely. Happy to talk to cats.
Awesome. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. By the way, I love the name of your podcast, and I have a funny story for you, if you don't mind me sharing really briefly.
Please.
When I was in middle school, and I was taking like a creative writing class, we had to write a commercial, and I titled the commercial Not Your Father's Tampon. I got in so
love
much
it.
Trouble. So I just love your the name of your
thing.
So
what you're saying was you're a shit disturber right from the beginning.
Yeah, right from the beginning.
Fantastic.
I got yelled at.
Well, fantastic. I am holding up your amazing book called The Psilocybin Handbook for Women. And so we're having a conversation today about the active ingredient magic mushrooms. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm thrilled. So this is a topic I am personally very interested in. I have, I'm sort of a neophyte psychonaut, if you will. So dabbling, but I do talk to my patients in clinic about psilocybin and the effects of psilocybin on the body and how we can actually use them for health, if you will.
So, if you'd allow me, I'd like to start with a short quote from page 40 of the book.
Absolutely.
Great. Okay. So, talking about magic mushrooms, Jennifer says, psilocybin may help you process trauma in new ways, disrupt negative thought patterns, experience memories in a new light, access remote memories, transcend the boundary of time, feel more creative, feel more connected to others or the world at large, and gain a larger sense of empathy. I love it. So tell
Okay.
us, how did you find yourself writing a book about magic mushrooms?
Quite by happy accident. So it was just a weird connection that I had with the publisher, and I had been writing about women's health. I'm a health and science medical journalist, been doing that for years and years, really focused on women's health. And then in recent years, with the resurgence of research on psychedelics, I've started writing about psychedelics in the journalism space as well. So it was a natural fit to merge the two for myself. But the idea came from my publisher, and then I just kind of got to run with it in terms of what content went in the book and everything. But I was really super excited to start writing about this topic because when I dug into the research, something that surprised me was that in many cases, more women are using some psychedelics more frequently than men. So that came as a surprise. But as I dug a little deeper, this wasn't a surprise. So while men tend to use psychedelics a little bit more recreationally, women are using psychedelics to self-treat. And there's self-treating for conditions like PTSD, other forms of trauma, anxiety, depression, chronic pain, issues related to the menstrual cycle. And that wasn't a surprise simply because, we know that women are more likely to get gaslit at the doctor's office for these very conditions, or disproportionately affected by all of these conditions. Yet they're gaslit at the doctor's office, and they're just not getting adequate treatment in the mainstream medical system. And that's not a dig. I mean, it's kind of a dig at the mainstream medical system, but I'm not against science and medicine is my point. I'm staunch. I'm very pa staunchly passionate about science as a medical journalist. I just get frustrated when there's not equal or adequate care for people across all gender
Oh, please share your anger about that because on this
spectrums.
podcast, we talk about how the system has failed us.
Yeah, and I'm really frustrated by it because I personally have endometriosis, and that affects 1 in 10 people assigned female at birth. In rare cases, it can affect the male body, but largely it's a condition that affects the female body. And so that's 10% of women in the US have endometriosis. And yet the National Institutes of Health designated less than 0.1% of its research funding studying endometriosis in 2022. And if we go back to that 10% stat, that's the same number of people that have like type 2 diabetes in this country. We study diabetes. We did, and we fund that research. We're just not doing it for endometriosis because it's a quote unquote female condition. And so that's really frustrating. And then I always, as part of this conversation to get everyone fired up and start raging about this, is that so women were largely excluded from early stage clinical trials until 1993, which feels like yesterday. Like I was, okay, maybe not
I
yesterday.
remember
I was a
1993.
teenager. I was a teenager. But
Yes.
that's really frustrating to me. And that's had dramatic ramifications for women's health. And to illustrate that, I like to share this timeline. In 1998, men got a drug for male sexual dysfunction, and everyone knows what that is. It's a household name. It's Viagra. And
Yes.
I'm always like, let's say it together when I'm doing talks. Like, and everyone shouts Viagra. But it in at that point in time, we didn't even have an adequate picture of what the clitoris looks like. So there's all
I
this
isn't
internal
that absurd?
structure. So
It's not.
absurd. Didn't happen until 2005, and that one didn't really feel like yesterday. And then
Yeah.
so a female urologist finally did some MRI researching and determined this. Then if we fast forward to 2015, that's when women finally got a drug for female sexual dysfunction. So that is a 17-year gap from when dudes got a drug to when women got a drug for the exact same condition. Yes, sexual dysfunction affects the female body and the male body differently and vastly differently from person to person. But it's still the same condition. It was just prioritized as a treatment for men was prioritized.
Yeah. Well, we know that there's a health gap. Actually, there's a fascinating article this morning in Forbes magazine that talks about the gender health gap and
Ah,
how, yes, did you happen to
I
catch it this
haven't.
morning?
No, but I will look it up.
Please do. It talks
Okay.
about how it can increase the GDP of the United States by $1 trillion if women are actually able to maintain work, et cetera, and contribute to society instead of having this massive health decline that can happen when we have that hormonal transition at
Yeah,
midlife.
absolutely.
Well, thank you for contributing to the body of work around this because, anything that is a ripple effect, I think, for women's health is helpful. And I am, as a clinician, amazed at how many times I am asked if I know anything about magic mushrooms and would they help.
Sure, absolutely. It's such a hot topic right now, and
It
everyone's excited about it.
is. It really is. So let's dig into that. Like, why
Okay.
would a woman want to take magic mushrooms to get the effects of psilocybin?
Yeah, I think it helps to start just by talking through some of the science about what actually happens in the brain and the body when we are on psilocybin, and
Oh,
that helps
yes,
people sort of
please.
understand like why is this even effective? Why are we getting all this amazing research and stuff? So in a nutshell, researchers have come up with a model to sort of explain what psychedelics do in the brain, and it's called the REBUS model, and that stands for Relaxed Beliefs Under Psychedelics. And this was created by Dr. Robin Carhart-Harris and Dr. Carl J. Friston. I always just like to give credit where credit is due, but I love this model because it really helps us understand what's actually happening and why psychedelics can be beneficial. So when we're young, our brains are super flexible. That's because we haven't really formulated our beliefs about ourselves or how the world around us operates. So we're still formulating that. So we're really malleable in our brains. Now, fast forward to adulthood, and that over time, those belief patterns become really rigid. So we get solidified in our identity, even though it's constantly changing, we still get pretty solidified in it, and especially with negative beliefs. And then, we can have trouble sort of changing our mind. So in a normal state of consciousness in adulthood, we can think of our brains as almost like this frozen pond. And if you were to try to take a new belief, let's try say you're trying to change like a negative belief about yourself, and if that new belief that you're trying to add into your brain is like a rock and you drop it on a frozen pond, nothing happens. It just goes thunk, But if we are on a psychedelic, then this is where the relaxed beliefs under psychedelics come in. That pond, instead of being frozen, is thawed. So now we actually just have water. Take a rock in the form of a new belief, drop it in, it gains entry and causes a ripple effect. And so we actually have a chance to really change our minds on a psychedelic about, especially about ourselves, but also negative beliefs about anything, really, which is really cool. And why does this happen? So researchers describe that we have like our belief systems end up forming this hierarchy. And so we can think of that as if almost like a C the structure of a corporation. At the top, you've got your CEOs, at the bottom, you've got your employees who are sort of lower on the ladder, right? And the CEOs of a corporation don't always want to listen to the beliefs that are at the bottom, I mean, the employees that are at the bottom of the ladder, and we can think of those as beliefs. So there's this hierarchy, and those CEO beliefs can become really domineering. And if they're negative beliefs, then it can be a really big problem. So it could be an issue. When we are on a psychedelic, it's like that hierarchy completely gets relaxed. And so everyone's equal, all the employee beliefs are equal. And so the lesser the employees that are sort of lower on the ladder can kind of gain a footing there in the belief corporation structure, which is really cool to think about. And then a couple of other concepts related to what happens in the brain can be really, I think, really helpful in understanding what some of those things that you were describing in the quote that you shared, like why are all these things possible? The other really cool concept that I love is called the helioscope effect. So a helioscope is an instrument that scientists use to look at the sun, so unrelated to psychedelics. But Dr. Gregor Hassler, he's also a prolific psychedelic researcher. He came up with this model to describe how we can view our trauma when we're on a psychedelic and view it from a safe distance. So helioscope, again, is this instrument that scientists use to look at the sun, and it, you know, puts a protective filter on because we're not supposed to look directly at the sun. Well, we can think of our trauma in the same way. In a normal state of consciousness in our everyday lives, we avoid thinking about our traumas because they're so triggering and they cause anxiety and fear and stress and frustration. And so when we are on a psychedelic, it's almost like we have that helioscope effect in place. We can actually view our traumas through a filter, from a new lens, and look at them safely without getting triggered. So so you can, you know, view something that's very difficult and not get triggered by it. And then we can reprocess it. And then when you're no longer on the psychedelic, that reprocessing can continue to happen. And so we can look at our traumas in a new way after the fact. So it's just a really cool concept to sort of share why these psychedelics might work.
Wow. I mean, the applicability of that, you know, the thing I find myself talking about most right now, it's so interesting in clinic. I never know what the trends are going to be, and it changes all the time. But this one stuck around for the while, and people are talking about trauma. And for women, as I was saying to a patient yesterday, she was reliving a story for me. I said, you know, we may have a big T trauma. Absolutely. There are lots of women with that experience, but I'm not sure spending 25 years talking about it in therapy is really resolves things. And even though I love my therapist, I love that work, that body of work, so many helpful tools, but absolutely, when it comes to trauma, is there a better way? Is there a more efficient way? And I personally love how psychedelics have the ability to sort of give us that extra filter, that different lens, that different vantage point is how I like to think of it. Like, we can look at the experience if it comes up, if we choose to, and we can see it in a different way. And what a beautiful thing. And as you were talking, I was reminded of the Netflix documentary and the book called How to Change Your Mind. Yes, we're talking about Michael Pollan, who's like the guy that wrote essentially not quite the first book, but probably the first popular book about psychedelics, and how a wonderful book. I love it. And he's great too. You know, it's that whole, how can we get a different perspective on the experience? And I think this is, you know, this is the default mode network in the brain. We do talk about that in the podcast. So my listeners are familiar with the concept.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yes, absolutely. So go ahead and talk neuro. It's just fun.
Yeah, good. I could talk about the default mode network briefly because there's some cool.
And what I want to say about it is, this is ultimately, here in Canada, we have Health Canada approval to use psilocybin for terminal cancer.
Sure.
So the question is, why indeed is psilocybin used for terminal cancer? And my understanding is that it takes away the fear of dying. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. It is a really cool concept. So yes, I do see that we're seeing a lot of potential with psilocybin for end of life care in terms of helping ease that transition for people. And, you know, I think it can also be beneficial for caregivers as well, because when we're dealing with grief or facing grief that's coming, it can help us look at grief in a different way. But yeah, essentially what I think psilocybin helps do is, it helps us feel a little bit more connected to something bigger than ourselves. You know, we're so focused on ourselves in everyday life, and that doesn't mean we're selfish. It's just the way that we are as humans. Yes, we have connections and stuff, but we still ultimately have to focus on ourselves first. And psilocybin does something really cool with, we were just talking about the default mode network. So I'll explain that because it helps explain all of this. So we have in our brain something called the default mode network, which many of you are familiar with. And this is a network of brain regions that work together to form our sense of self. It's also very concerned with our empathy and our autobiographical memories, all of these things. And when you are using psilocybin, parts of the default mode network that normally connect will disconnect, and parts that that don't normally connect will connect. So it's like taking that outlet that we all have in our houses with like the power strip, and we unplug a bunch of cords and plug them back in a different way, just temporarily. But this has some really cool beneficial effects. A common term that people talk about in psychedelics is something called ego death. So ego death can sound really scary because it sounds like you're completely losing your sense of self. But on a macro dose of about 3.5 grams, you're just going to have some really beneficial effects of ego death, meaning that instead of really being so focused on yourself, you get this greater sense of connection to the universe at large,
Who doesn't want that?
it's amazing. I mean, and I can describe it from my own perspective, but there's this really cool concept called oceanic boundlessness to describe this term of feeling that greater sense of connection. And it's a term that Freud and a French mystic coined to describe that deeper connection, unrelated to psychedelics. But when you're on psychedelics, we have this concept of oceanic boundlessness, where instead of being so focused on ourselves, we feel connected to the universe at large, or it could be to nature, or it could be just to something greater. And then, you also mentioned by reading that quote that sort of like that time is just a false construct, right? We get that sense too with that oceanic boundlessness. And so you can almost visualize your whole life as not necessarily a linear thing, but as where you could bend upon time itself and visit the past or circle back to the future. And I think that all relates back to how we understand death, that like, so death, yeah, it feels like it's permanent ending. But essentially, it's not. We're all connected in some way, in a greater way than just like thinking about our physical lives on Earth. And I'm not trying to get all philosophical or like into religion or anything like that. It's just this really cool feeling that can happen when you're on a psychedelic. So I think that that can help lessen the fear of transitioning to death, or for caregivers, that idea, that concept of that we're going to lose someone and we have this deep sorrow and grief. Instead, it can help us really celebrate who that person is and ease that transition for us as well as caregivers.
As someone with a mother who has advanced dementia, I can
So
say,
sorry.
yeah, thank you. I can say that experiencing any of the things you're talking about for me as her family, for her caregivers, when I see how sad they are when they have had a resident pass, would be a kind and compassionate thing.
Absolutely,
Let's
absolutely.
take more of that, please.
Yeah, and it helped me a lot. I'm facing, my parents are aging, they've had health problems. I know I'm going to lose them at some point in time. So when I did my psilocybin journey, this was something that my brain wanted me to focus on, even though I didn't really want to focus on it. But I was able to look at this sort of like future trauma, is what I'm going to call it, sort of a weird way of describing it, but it's a future trauma. I know I'm going to face it. And it gave me a new perspective on it. Before, I used to think after they die, I'm just going to have this unending wall of grief and I'll never be happy again and life will just be a dark black hole, right? And it was an erroneous way of thinking. I mean, yes, I'm going to go through a lot of grief and sorrow, and that's okay, part of life. And but on the other side, I'm going to be okay. And so facing that during my psilocybin journey was really powerful for me in terms of lessening the anxiety that I have about eventually losing them. And then, I was just describing that oceanic boundlessness. One of the things I really felt on my journey was this connection to all the people that I know and love. It's almost like as if I was connected by threads of light to them, and they were sending love to me, and I was sending love back out to them. And I think a lot of times we know we have a support system in this life, but really feel that in your body was one of the most profound things I've ever experienced. And so it really changed my perspective in knowing that, yes, when I face this future trauma, I have people I can lean on in a really solid way to help me get through it. I have to walk through it on my own in terms of my own grief, but I'm not alone in this world, and that's a really powerful thing to know.
I would say, and I just have to say, when you were describing how you felt about the sort of impending loss of your parents at some point, that sort of endless darkness, I was like, it's a very Gen X way to describe it. Like, it really very much is.
Yes.
And I get it. I had those moments myself prior to my father passing and my mom being sick. And I remember how devastating and anxiety-laden it made me as someone who's very close to parents, right? And I think, how could we have an option that's kinder, that's going to bring in more kindness, that's going to help us understand that grief that we will experience, even if it's sort of to prepare as best you can? And you're saying there is evidence that psilocybin can really help with that.
Absolutely. And I just see so much potential there. So it's brilliant. It's magical, right?
Yes. Extraordinary.
It's time to breathe easier this allergy season with Breathe Right Nasal Strips. With instant nasal congestion relief for up to 12 hours, you can spend your time on your terms, not on your noses. Stuffy nose from outdoor allergens? No problem. We got you. Allergy season just turned into stripping season. Instant relief from nasal congestion anytime, anywhere. Need more convincing? Click the banner below and get a free sample. Breathe Right. Get your strip on. Use as directed.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.
Okay, this is a podcast about menopause. So what I would and perimenopause, which lasts from, you know, 35 to 55, sometimes up to 60 for some women. So in that time, we can have a cluster of things that go sideways, especially related to our women's health.
Yes. So,
and you have some expertise and experience with this.
I do.
Tell us, please.
I'm currently, just to give you context for my age and everything, I'm 45 and I'm definitely in the middle, somewhere in the middle of perimenopause, you know, so I'm right there. And I think, you know, a lot of people don't have this concept of what menopause is. It's kind of like a blip on the map, right? You're, when you hit menopause, it's because you've had an absence of a period for a year, you know, but I don't mean that it's like a blip for the conditions that, or the symptoms that we face, because a lot of that happens in perimenopause. But I think there's this misconception that menopause is this long time, but it's perimenopause that's the long thing, which you were just describing.
That's right.
After you hit menopause, you're in postmenopause, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do see a lot of potential for psilocybin to help with that, with the symptoms that we often face. You know, for one, one of the main symptoms of menopause or perimenopause can be depression, like a new depression that you've never felt before. And the first thing that'll happen if you go to your doctor and say, I'm depressed, and you're in your, you know, middle age time, they'll give you a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, which is a common antidepressant. And there's nothing wrong with those medications. I have used them in the past. They're great and they can be really helpful. But there are alternatives, and I do have a concern about someone just being thrown on an SSRI without trying other methods first. So
for life, this is what happens.
Exactly, right. So, you know, an SSRI by nature, how it works is that it blunts your mood, right? But not only does it blunt your lows, which we're aiming for, it also blunts your highs. So you're not able to lean into joy as much. That's one concern I have with SSRIs. The other one, especially in perimenopause, is that it can exacerbate other symptoms of perimenopause, such as low libido or sexual dysfunction. So a lot of times people are taking an SSRI and then to combat one symptom, but they're exacerbating another. You know, you do have to take SSRIs daily. That's how they work. You know, if you don't take them, they won't work. With psilocybin, you don't have to do that. You know, you can do a macro dose once a year, once every 6 months, and still have really some of these beneficial effects against depression, especially major depression. Can I pause you right there?
Yeah. Let's talk about the dosing real quickly so that people understand when you're saying macro versus micro. We actually haven't talked about micro. We haven't talked about hero either, but can you break it down for us, please?
Okay, I will. Yeah, I just wanted to finish what I was saying because psilocybin will, instead of blunting your mood like we have with SSRIs, psilocybin will actually, we've learned through research, it actually makes you feel more okay with your highs and lows, which is a really, really cool thing. But yes, talking about dosage, that's actually really important because I'm throwing out terms that people may not be familiar with. So we've got microdosing, we've got macrodosing, and then we've got heroic doses. There are other names for doses along the way, but I'll just describe what these are. And I'm going to start with the macro dose, even though that's sort of the middle range dose, because I think it's the one that is most commonly what people are doing. So a macro dose is going to be the dosage that people are giving in clinical trials. It's usually used for psychedelic assisted therapy. So any sort of therapeutic experience, but you are still going to be tripping essentially. And so that's about, you can think of that as being from like 2.5 to 3.5 grams would be a macro dose. And you're going to have those classic trippy effects that we see, like visuals and geometric patterns, different things going on in the body. A lot of these brain things that the neurobiology that I was already describing would be happening. A heroic dose is going to be something over like 5 grams. And that's for experienced psychonauts. Like if you have never tried psilocybin before, you do not want to do a heroic dose on your first go. I mean, it does happen for lots of people that way, because they don't know what they're doing, but you don't want to go above, you don't want to do that 5 gram as your first dose. Go slow and start low, you know, that's kind of the phrasing. A micro dose, on the other hand, is completely different. So that's something like a 10th of a gram. And so when you're on a micro dose, you're not going to be tripping. You would be safe to drive. You wouldn't really be like feeling psychedelic effects, although maybe a little bit in the background in terms of you would have gained some focus, perhaps less anxiety, just kind of a sense of calm and more focus. That can be what happens on a microdose. But again, you're perfectly fine to drive and go do things as long as you're taking a legit microdose of like, you know, a 10th of a gram, essentially. So that just kind of helps explain those different dosages. But my point is that you could do a macro dose, so like psychedelic assisted therapy, once a year, maybe twice a year, and have some of those really beneficial effects on depression. Whereas if you think about an SSRI, you're taking an SSRI every day and then exacerbating other side effects of perimenopause. But psilocybin doesn't exacerbate any of those effects. Like it doesn't cause low libido, all of that. So I think that that's something to consider.
Quite the opposite, I find. More like high libido, which is very nice for women in midlife. Let's talk about that.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's talk about that. So obviously sexual dysfunction is something that can crop up for people in perimenopause. I mean, it can crop up at any point in time in your life, but it's definitely more prevalent in perimenopause and menopause. And sort of the statistics on that is that 40 to 45% of people assigned female at birth will have some type of sexual dysfunction in their reproductive years. In menopause, perimenopause, that goes up to 80-85%. So it doubles essentially when we get up there in perimenopause and menopause. And there are two things that are protective against female sexual dysfunction. One is having a positive body image, and the other is having good intimate partner communication. And psilocybin can facilitate both of these, and we know this through scientific research already. So what psilocybin can help with in terms of body image, we've looked at clinical trials for anorexia nervosa with psilocybin. So anorexia, of course, is an eating disorder, is one of the most commonly talked about, even though we have like 11 types of different eating disorders. But psilocybin is being studied for anorexia, and we're getting really promising results out of that in terms of helping with body image. Researchers think that when an eating disorder is present, there's some rigidity in a part of the brain called the angular gyrus, and this can help lessen some of that rigidity. Psilocybin can help lessen some of that rigidity, and then help change some of our what's called interoceptive awareness, which is our like internal states awareness of the internal states of our body, but it's also concerned with our like, how we perceive our bodies. So if we have body dysmorphia, that would be some rigidity in the angular gyrus going on. So again, psilocybin may be able to help with body image. And then also it may help facilitate intimate partner communication. So I've certainly heard stories of couples using psilocybin together and then gaining a better like connection or better understanding of each other, and that helping in the bedroom. However, I don't think it's necessary that you do psilocybin with your partner. So for example, I went off and did psilocybin on my own without my partner present. I had my own like personalized journey. And, you know, he just stayed at home and sat on the porch. So, you know, he wasn't doing anything crazy or like, you know, whatsoever. But I came back and I felt exponentially more connected to him, even though he hadn't changed. I had changed, you know. And I wasn't necessarily dealing with female sexual dysfunction, but it definitely changed my connection to him. And it was like walls came down. And so I could see that helping with someone who is dealing with some female sexual dysfunction, bringing down some of those walls can help sort of just, you know, relax you, keep you calm in the bedroom, and perhaps just help with any sort of sexual dysfunction that you might be experiencing. I did talk to a neuroscientist when I was writing the book. Her name is Dr. Michelle Ross. And she mentioned that, you know, psilocybin may boost that body confidence, but also just, you know, confidence in general, and then help you communicate better in the bedroom with your partner if needed, if that's something that's needed. So I see a lot of potential there for it to help with female sexual dysfunction. Now, I don't necessarily see it as like some sort of classic aphrodisiac or anything like that, like we think of oysters or whatever, but it definitely could help change the way that you interact in the bedroom, you know. If does that make sense?
It does. And I love what you said about walls coming down. That is like an excellent way to describe my own experience with psilocybin. Was just very much like that. It was like when you have a connection to the bigger picture.
Yeah.
You don't have such a death grip on all of the things that prevent you psychologically from having freedom sexually in your partnership, right? Or,
absolutely,
you know, not even in your partnership, right? Even with yourself. So you don't have that death grip on, I'm too old, I'm too fat, I'm too not this, I'm too not sexy, I'm too submissive, I'm too, you know, all of those things that kind of we get tangled in. Which,
the brain
of course,
spin.
Yes. And I think that's, and because the brain is absolutely the primary sex organ for women. By the way, that little nugget that you shared about interoception and stuff, this, like, we're talking about brain and mushroom. Guys, this is like foreplay for me. How are you doing?
It totally is. I'm feeling it. Getting all hot and bothered.
Honestly, it's so sexy to talk about these things. It's awesome. I'm going to have to tell my husband that. Oh my, I'm actually red. If you can see me, I'm actually red.
Yeah, a little bit. Yes, you are.
I am.
Stand yourself there.
I know, right? It's not a hot flash, I swear.
Mine might be.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I don't know what's going on here.
But I love it. I love it. And what you said about is it the boosting of the confidence, or is that we drop the shit and we can just go and be the free spirit that we were born to be, essentially?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of, it's probably a bit of both, but that dropping of the walls has been really key for me in all facets of my life, because, you know, I think that greater connection that I was describing that I feel with my husband, it's like maybe I was holding up a wall there and trying not to be so vulnerable with my partner all the time. And so I put up a wall to protect myself, and now those walls are gone. In the book, I referenced like that it was like the Kool-Aid man coming in and crashing through all the walls.
I love that.
Yeah. You
know? Totally. Yeah. But it's not even just, first thing I want to just make mention of something you said earlier. This is one of my favorite aspects of psilocybin in particular. I can speak about that from personal experience. I can sort of speak academically about the other psychedelics, which would be, there's a bunch of them, but MDMA, LSD, peyote,
ayahuasca,
Ibogaine. Is it Ibogaine or Ibogaine?
Yeah, I think it's Ibogaine, but
Ibogaine.
I never know.
Yes. The bros are talking about that one right now. So if you want to know more about that, go over to Huberman's Lab podcast, Tim Ferriss. Those guys are all talking about that. Rogan. Yes. Let's not forget about him. Yeah. They're all talking about that right now. So it's like a bro thing right now. So which means, I don't know, like for me, when I hear that kind of thing, or, you know, why are we gendering these things? That's my silly old brain. But, you know, I think psilocybin is like the ultimate representation of Mother Nature and Mother Earth.
Oh, yeah. It is, you know, if you've watched any mushroom documentaries, just in general, not necessarily related to magic mushrooms, but fungi in general, is it creates what's called this mycelium network and then a greater mycorrhizal network. So if we think about a forest, we've got all this root connection of fungi connecting one tree on one way end of the forest with another tree. And this network sends nutrients back and forth. So if you've got a tree in the north section of the forest, it's like depleted of nutrients. This mycelium network can pull nutrients from something on the south end and send it to the north end of the forest, which is sort
Amazing.
of a, I mean, it's my wonky way of describing it. But I think about that in terms of women and like our femininity and our connection. And, you know, I have a group of female friends, there's four of us. And I think of us constantly doing that with each other. Like, you know, one friend, her father just died. And I feel like we're, even though it's just in a text thread, we're sending these nutrients to her, these love nutrients. And so it's like women create our own sort of mycelium and mycorrhizal network. And so I love that analogy between, you know, fungi and then thinking about the way that women are so nurturing to each other, at least in my opinion. I mean, I know that there are times when women are not nurturing to each other, but when you do have a very nurturing space, that's what it feels like to me.
Well, and I think the times we aren't nurturing to each other, I mean, when I was a kid, it was glamorous to be bitchy to other women. Like there was TV shows that
right.
That made a big deal of that and made lots of money doing that. But we're coming back. It's I personally, it's the age of Aquarius stuff. It's returning to the mother. It's it's all of those great.
It's time to breathe easier this allergy season with Breathe Right nasal strips. With instant nasal congestion relief for up to 12 hours, you can spend your time on your terms, not on your noses. Stuffy nose from outdoor allergens? No problem. We got you. Allergy season just turned into stripping season. Instant relief from nasal congestion anytime, anywhere. Need more convincing? Click the banner below and get a free sample. Breathe Right. Get your strip on. Use as directed.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that the largest plant on the planet is a mycelium network in Oregon State?
Oh, you might be right. I'm not sure.
Hundreds of hectares large. Like it's the largest.
Crazy.
It's the largest organic item. And I believe this is like Paul Stamets would be talking about this. He's kind of like he's sort of the OG psychonaut, isn't he?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Definitely.
The mushroom guy anyways.
Yeah.
But there's so many juicy tidbits in this conversation that I want to pick up, but I do want to spend some time talking about the women's sort of menstrual disorders and your experience with the mushrooms. And
sure.
You did talk about having your own diagnosis of endometriosis. You said, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Good. Yeah. I would love to get into that. I did want to go circle back to the menopause talk just for a second.
Yes.
One of the things that we didn't get a chance to cover is that one thing that I don't think many people realize is that if you've had adverse childhood experiences in your life, that can exacerbate your menopause symptoms. And that sounds crazy. Like how can something in childhood exacerbate like your hot flashes? But it makes sense. So adverse childhood experiences are things that happened in childhood that were traumatic. So it could be violence in the home or abuse, neglect, a traumatic divorce, living through systemic racism in your community, poverty, all of these things can be traumatic. And it changes your stress response physically in your body. And that's lasting. So that change, that altered stress response can affect our menopause symptoms. And to just put this in context, it's something like 1 in 6 adults. Yeah, this is correct. 1 in 6 adults have had 4 or more adverse childhood experiences. And if you've had 4 or more adverse childhood experiences, you're more likely to have worsened menopause symptoms. It's just this weird bit of science. So I just wanted to share that. But yes, digging into the menstrual cycle, which is one of my favorite things to talk about in relation to psilocybin, which sounds a little weird, but I see a lot of potential for psilocybin to help with issues related to the menstrual cycle. So what we're learning through research right now, and all we have right now are case studies and anecdotal reports. So we definitely need more research on this. But Johns Hopkins, there's some great women scientists, and I don't mean to say, oh, they're women scientists. I just am pointing out that yes, women are the ones studying this because no one else is. So Dr. Natalie Gukasian and Dr. Sasha K. Narayan are studying this, but they did some case studies to see how psilocybin potentially affects the menstrual cycle. And they've learned three things that might be possibly happening. One is that likely if you do a macrodose, your period might come a little early. So I just like to make people aware of that. Number two is that if you've had an absence of a period for a while, not related to menopause, but in your reproductive years, which of course can happen for multiple reasons, like stress or whatever, but it may return. And then the third thing is if you, so your period may return if you've had an absence of a period for a while, and then it may re-regulate your menstrual cycle. So psilocybin may bring regulation back to your cycle if you've had a time of irregularity, and irregularities can happen for a number of, you know, reasons and conditions as well. So this is super fascinating, and I'm excited that, you know, people are studying this, and I hope they continue to study it because I see a lot of potential for things like polycystic ovary syndrome, premenstrual dysphoric disorder, even endometriosis, even though that's not what we consider like a classic menstrual cycle disorder or anything like that. It's just related to the menstrual cycle. But yeah, so a lot of potential there. And the mechanisms of action are sort of fascinating to me. So our cycles occur along what's called the hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis, meaning our brains are essentially talking to our ovaries. And when one hormone kicks off, it tells another hormone what to do in this feedback loop. And that's why we have our follicular phase followed by ovulation, then the luteal phase, and then we get our periods. That's the trajectory of the menstrual cycle, and it starts all over again, right? But we also have another axis in our bodies called the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. And so this axis is involved in our stress response. And when we take psilocybin, we are activating our serotonin receptors, and it's working along that HPA axis. But by their names, you can tell that these axes overlap. So we've got with the hypothalamus and the pituitary gland, you've got your HPG axis and your HPA axis. They overlap. And we know just in general life that these axes interact with each other. If we get stressed out, that may we may skip a period, or if we are on our periods, we might be more stressed out. It's just the way that it works. So these overlap. So researchers are saying it's not a stretch to assume that that psilocybin may affect your menstrual cycle, or vice versa, that where you are in your period in your menstrual cycle may affect your journey. And that's simply having to do with some of the things that are going on with our hormones.
That's fascinating. Well, we know that different times of a period or different times of the menstrual cycle, women are more likely to have physical injuries. If we take a concussion or a head injury during certain phases of the cycle, we can have a more severe experience or a lesser or more healing experience. So, or a quicker to heal. So it's not surprising to hear that at all, but do tell. When is the best time to take a micro, a macro, or maybe even a hero? Let's not talk hero, okay? That's
the
advanced
maneuver. Yeah, we'll skip out on hero. Yeah. I don't want anyone diving into that if they're new to psychedelics. But I mean, it's nothing to be afraid of. It's just more you want to gain the experience first of a smaller session first.
Yes.
But yeah, so I brought in an indigenous wisdom expert to ask some questions about this. And I was really fascinated because what she shared actually meshed really well with science and, you know, just a little bit of background. So indigenous communities have been using psilocybin for, you know, thousands of years, however long they've been using, way longer than like someone like me, a white woman in the US has been using psilocybin. And so, we think of science as this process of doing something over and over again to reproduce the same results, but that's exactly what indigenous communities have done. So I brought in an indigenous wisdom expert to help me sort of understand where in the cycle it would make the best sense to do a macro dose. And her name is Michaela De La Maico. She goes by Mama De La Maico on Instagram. And she practices what she calls Mush Womb Consciousness, which I just love because love the name. She works with people with plant medicine to help sort of regulate menstrual cycles and do other, you know, womb care aspects. And I like love to enunciate it. Womb care, because I had a male journalist misquote me and he wrote wound care in an article.
Oh, dear.
And I was like, well, yes, sometimes the uterus feels like a wound. But anyway, how very male. I know, how very male of him, right? Yeah. Poor guy. I've been telling this joke on every single podcast. But anyway, with Mama De La Maico or Michaela De La Maico, she recommended doing a macro dose when you're closer to ovulation rather than when you get closer to your period. So in Indigenous communities, they don't allow people to partake in mushroom ceremonies if they are on their menstrual cycle. And so that's something that's really important to honor if you are going to a retreat in an indigenous community working with an Indigenous practitioner. But this all makes sense from a really, you know, scientific perspective as well. So doing a mushroom journey can be very depleting on the body, meaning like energy depleting. And as we get into closer to our menstrual cycles in that luteal phase, our bodies have less energy available to us. So a lot of people tend to fast before a psilocybin journey. It might be just a few hours or it could be a few days. That would be really hard to do when you're in that late luteal phase. But you have more energy available to you in your body during the ovulation time, as opposed to, you know, getting closer to your menstrual cycle. And of course, this is all why we end up having cravings as we get closer to our periods. But what's happening in the body from a scientific perspective is in that luteal phase, we actually become insulin resistant. So this all has to do with the way that we process glucose and you know, how insulin works on our cells and all of that. And that changes in the luteal phase because of the fact that all the energy in the body is being sent to the womb, you know, for a potential baby. But when we're at ovulation, that's not quite happening yet. So it's much more accessible to journey on a macro dose during that ovulation time. And then as far as microdoses go, so microdosing, you typically follow a protocol. So there are several different protocols. There's the Stamets stack. You mentioned Paul Stamets. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Fadiman protocol. And I mentioned both of those in the book and give the logistics for those with a call out for more information if you need it. But you follow a protocol, and these protocols are typically like you might do every other day of microdosing, or it's like 4 days on, 4 days off. You'd follow that protocol for like a few weeks, and then you take a break, and then you start up again. So my point with the menstrual cycle, and this is information coming from Michaela De La Maico, she said that if you are planning to microdose to see how that affects your menstrual cycle, to do that for 3 months. So follow whatever protocol you're going to follow and follow all the breaks in the protocol, but follow it for 3 months to see how that works with your menstrual cycle and keep track of it. Maybe like, you know, journal or, you know, a phone app that you track your period with. Keep track of what you're experiencing, if any symptoms are changing, and that will help you to know if whatever protocol you're following and the microdose plan that you're going on is actually working for your menstrual cycle or helping you in any way. And then if it's not, you can readjust. You might follow a different protocol or something like that, or you might decide microdosing is not for you, or you might decide that it is, you know, but it's just that you need to follow it for 3 months to see how that affects your cycle, because it just takes that long to gain results, essentially. I mean, you might have results right away, but if you aren't having them, just give it more time.
Oh, fascinating. Well, and I think the thing to take away, and you touched on this earlier, is that, you know, unlike a pharmaceutical, when you're using the plant medicine, in this case, we're talking about psilocybin, you don't have to follow like every single day you take this kind of thing. I have dear loved ones who use microdose psilocybin to keep depression under control, and they literally take one dose a month.
Yeah, that's great.
It's a tiny amount we're talking about here. And so, of course, just to remind the listeners, a micro dose is a tenth of a macro dose, or like minimal macro dose. If it's 1 gram, then micro dose is 100 milligrams. So, and that's certainly what I recommend in office when someone has chronic pain. But again, it's that having awareness that you don't just take the capsule and continue to take it for the rest of your life. That's not how this works. This speaks to a section in the book, and we're talking about the psilocybin handbook for women, which Jennifer wrote. Here it is. Match it to those of you who see the video. I matched my lipstick to the book today.
I love it. Beautiful.
Yes, thank you. You talk about set and setting, and I love the way you spoke about it. It's one of my favorite concepts around using magic mushrooms for a number of reasons, but it's being aware essentially of, number one, we come from this culture that's just like, you know, chuck a tampon in and forget it. But is that really, are you really getting the experience of a menstrual period? Now, sometimes it's fraught for women. So I get it, right? You just want to forget that it's even there. But the commercials will tell us we can ride a horseback and play tennis with little tiny white shorts on while we've got a tiny little sports tampon in, whatever the hell that is. Anyways, what was I talking about? Oh, yes, right. Set and setting. But I love that you're saying, like, come at it. And you did interview somebody for this, so you'll know who I'm talking about. But because her name is escaping me. But, you know, what is the light intention you wish for the experience of taking the capsule? And then are you in an environment that feels safe and nourishing to you? You don't just chuck it in and forget about it. Let's talk about that, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So you described that really well. So set and setting. Set is your mindset. Setting is what your environment is when you're going into a journey. And so in talking about that mindset, I think that there had been sort of this concept that we must set an intention before going into a psilocybin journey, or it's similar to how if you take a yoga class, you set an intention at the start, and that might be like to work on something specific or whatever. But with psilocybin, the two women that I interviewed who are experts in using psilocybin would be Michelle Pribick and, I'm sorry, I said that wrong, Lana Pribick. She's with the Modern Psychedelics podcast. And then Michelle Janicki, and she wrote the Psilocybin Mushroom Companion, I believe, another book with my same publisher, so she's great. But I talked to them, and what they recommended is instead of setting like this specific intention of like, I need to work on this thing for myself, be open-minded to let the mushroom take you where it needs to take you. And it's really just working on what's already in your brain, what's in your subconscious, and what you really need to work on. So be aware though, that when it starts to take you somewhere like that feels like trauma, even though we have that helioscope effect in place when we're on a psychedelic, your instinct is going to be to resist looking at that trauma. And that's when some anxiety can typically crop up during a psilocybin journey. You might be like trucking along, having a good time. The trees are real pretty and you're feeling euphoric. And all of a sudden the mushroom's like, hey, we need to work on your trauma, lady. And so it might take you to a place that you're like, no, hell no, absolutely not, unsubscribe, you know, and that definitely happened to me. But if you can stop putting up that resistance and just go with the flow of the journey, you will, that anxiety will go away, and you'll be able to look at that trauma in a really safe way, again, with that helioscope effect in place. And there will likely be a reward on the other side. So for me, going through that like experience of thinking about my parents' deaths, I didn't want to look at it. I didn't want to think about it. I did. I sat with it. On the other side, I felt the most peace and euphoria I've ever felt, and knowing that I will be okay. So a lot of people, even if they have a quote unquote a bad trip, and we're trying to change the language around that to be a challenging trip instead, or you might just go through a challenging section. You know, if that happens to you, just sit with it. Try to remain calm, try to tap into the things that typically calm you, and you'll likely be okay. And there might be a reward on the other side. A lot of people in survey, you know, psychedelic research surveys say that even if they've had a difficult experience or a challenging trip, that it still ranks up there as one of the most profound experiences of their lives. And that's definitely true for me. Again, I went through like about a 10-minute section there where I was like, oh no, where like the couch next to me or that I was sitting on was like breathing. And I was like, no. So, you know, things like that do happen, but just relax into it. So that mindset is really important. And the main takeaway there is really just try to remain calm if something crops up and just be open to the experience. And then with, because the thing is, if you set an intention that's very specific, you might get caught in like this thought spiral, you know, and I don't want that to scare anyone. I'm just like trying to remind you to be as open to the experience as possible. Now, the setting is really your environment. Like, where are you? Are you inside? Are you outside? Are you in a place that you feel really comfortable? Are you at a rave and it's like, and you're like overstimulated? That might not be the best way to go about doing psychedelics unless you're a little bit more experienced with it. And we also have something called a museum dose, and that is for like being out in public. So you can think of that as maybe like 1 gram, where you're like slightly 0.75 to 1 gram. You're slightly having some psychedelic effects, but you're not like full on tripping your balls off or anything, you know? So I love that term, the museum dose.
Great term. I have never heard that before. I love it.
Yeah, it's fun. But yeah, so that setting is really important too, because you do want to be, if you're doing a therapeutic experience, you want to be in a place that you feel really calm and safe. And you want the people around you, if there are people around you, to be people that are very safe for you, because you are in a very vulnerable place and you're open to suggestibility, hence that rebus model that I was describing, that relaxed beliefs under psychedelics. You are open to suggestibility on a psychedelic. And so I have a whole section in the book about consent in psilocybin sessions. And what I mean by that is, so if you're working with like a guide or a therapist or another practitioner, obviously, sexual touch should be completely off the table, but your guide may say, "Hey, are you comfortable with like me holding your hand if something difficult comes up?" And you can say no to any sort of touch like that, but that's a conversation that needs to be had when you're sober. Like asking your guide should be talking to you about the types of touch, like the therapeutic touch that you might be okay with or not okay with. That's a conversation outside of psychedelics. But this all relates back to setting, just because I want you to be really safe about who's around you, because there have been instances of sexual assault in the psychedelic industry. And, you know, that's not to diss the psychedelic industry. It ha Sexual assault happens in every industry, so it's not a surprise that it's happening in psychedelics. But I just want to make people aware that you are open to that suggestibility. And so your setting is really important, but it's also really important for your mindset, because if you're in, like I said, if you're in a place where it's like and you might get overstimulated and have a very negative experience, whereas if you're in a very calm setting in your like apartment where you've got all your yoga poofs and whatnot, your special blankets, you're going to feel a little safer and calmer.
Yes, my own experience with microdosing has been on a Sunday morning when I'm at home and I got nothing but the laundry and football. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
My husband's in the house, right? So obviously,
Yeah.
like just a gentle experience, nothing's expected of me. I can just let it be what it needs to be. But to go back to
Yes.
set for a second, this is a question I get asked commonly in the office when I'm talking about this, or it is, you know, how do I okay, so I just take it at bedtime and then go to sleep and or if I'm having a bad day, I take no, this is not how you do microdose. No bueno.
No.
No bueno. You just
Yeah.
it's not too real. It's not like taking a pain reliever. Like, you don't
No.
take it like that.
Right. Yeah, I think it's helpful to follow a protocol. And then I would avoid actually taking it at night, because psilocybin is slightly stimulating in a microdose, I mean, in a macrodose, but lesser so with a microdose. But if you have any issues with sleep, which most of us have some issue,
Absolutely.
I envy those people that are just like, you know, all the time, but
Me
that's not
too.
me. But yeah, there's some slight elevation of blood pressure and heart rate. And so, you know, certainly be mind, like, it's a reason to stop and think about, you know, using any sort of psilocybin. If you do have a heart condition, I just want to point that out as a safety caveat. Talk to a medical professional if it's safe for you to do that. But you know, just to note that elevation of heart rate and blood pressure might keep you awake if you were to microdose at night. So I recommend microdosing in the morning, and then, which feels a little weird because you're like, oh, hey, I have to take this, I'm taking this substance that is, you know, largely illegal yet, and like going about my day. And then it's like, well, a microdose really doesn't make you high or anything like that. So just be aware of that. But you don't want to take it at night, most likely, because it may keep you awake. And you do generally want to follow a protocol, at least for a while, to see how that works for you, because these protocols are designed to work with microdosing and help you with symptoms and issues that are cropping up. If you're just taking it willy-nilly, you don't, you know, you're not really gaining a perspective on how it's helping you. Now, all that being said, you know, after you've practiced a protocol for a while, you may know yourself well enough to just take it as needed. So something like, oh, Wednesday, I'm feeling a little bit more anxious and I'm going to microdose today. And then you don't necessarily have to follow a protocol, but it's helpful to follow that protocol initially to see how those things work for you.
Well, and I think it's an invitation to tune in inwards. Like you said, you talked about interoception. It's for our generation in particular, we very much have been told, like, just, you know, don't listen to the body. It's all about the thinking. We have this very masculine approach to health, which is, you know, very intellectual, but actually a woman's body and our intuition is our connection to the earth. It's the all the information we need.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So if women want to try the experience of psilocybin or magic mushrooms, what do you recommend?
Yeah. I mean, it's a hard question to answer simply because we do have this sort of patchwork of legality. And I don't know all the laws in Canada where you are yet, but in the US, it's broadly illegal. Psilocybin is still broadly illegal federally. Certain states have enacted legislation making psilocybin legal in certain contexts. So like in Oregon, it's I think it's decriminalized in general, but for legal use, it's you know, legal for psychedelic assisted therapy. So in that context. So just to give you an example that there's a patchwork of legality in terms of, is it decriminalized, meaning police aren't really prosecuting psilocybin use, or is it like, are there legal applications in place? And so really we've got Oregon and Denver and then a few other like municipalities and that have done some different legislation, and states are currently enacting a bunch of different legislation and elsewhere, but that's all still in process. But to answer that question of like, how do you go about doing a journey can be complicated. So yes, you could go to one of the states where, or cities where we've got legality or decriminalization, or you could go on a retreat out of the country. So like Mexico often has retreats. I think Jamaica, there are, you know, different places where it's decriminalized and retreat facilitators are able to facilitate. The other thing that you can do, and this is what I did, is I hired an underground guide and then met him at a cabin in the woods, which sounds really crazy, but I did my research on who he was and everything. And I mentioned him in the book if anyone wants to reach out, but you can find underground guides. I just recommend people research extensively before working with anyone, whether that's a therapist or a guide or a retreat. Do your research, read reviews on the person or people, and make sure it's something that you feel really safe doing. That's a hard question to answer, but I tried.
Yeah, no, you did a great job. It's a legal gray zone in Canada right now. So it's not being prosecuted. It's not, you know, it's not because we have legal cannabis here. I have a friend who works in a cannabis shop, and he tells me that 5 or 6 times a day when he's working, he'll get asked if there's magic mushrooms available. So people are becoming very, very aware of the possibility of how helpful, let's say, the psilocybin can be for us. And that's great. It's great news. There are sources for it. I'm speaking what I know is here in Canada. So there are sources for it. But rather than me just sharing, what I'd like to say is ask your peeps, because chances are someone in your friend group is already microdosing and has been for a while.
Right. Yes. Yeah. You can usually find someone who has a resource that you can reach out to. For safety reasons, I always recommend that people test any substance that they receive through. So DanceSafe is a place where you can order test kits. Test your product, make sure you're not getting anything that you don't want in your product, that sort of thing. And that goes for really any substance that you're taking.
And that's a great suggestion too, because we know for sure is that mushrooms are vast. There are many, many different kinds of mushrooms, and there are some that are quite toxic. So you want to make sure that you're not getting anything like that. That's why it's not a good idea to just go out and forage for your own.
Yeah, I don't recommend that, because there are some mushrooms that you take once and you're gone.
Your so, tits up in the rhubarb. Yes.
Yeah,
you get one shot with that one.
Yeah.
Not good. Exactly. Not good. So please just do your research. As Jennifer mm-hmm. has said to us, just with all of this, there's so much information right now available about psychedelics and their potentiality in, I love the term psychological flexibility, by the way. That's just one of my, because who doesn't need that?
We all need psychological flexibility.
God, like we get this story suction cupped onto our faces, and again, yes. There's that rigidity that you talked about, like, and the default mode network is involved in this. And I think this is probably my favorite thing about the psilocybin, is that it allows us to sort of disconnect from those stories that are, what did you call it? There's something, ego something. Yes. Ego death.
Oh, ego death. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Which is kind of a grim way to say it, but
right.
I mean, it's never going to be completely gone. Let's put it that way. So,
right. Yeah. It'll still be there.
Yeah, it will. The safety stuff will be there to take care of you, because that's just hardwired into the central nervous system. But it's a fascinating conversation. I feel so much better educated because of this amazing book that you wrote,
thank
The Psilocybin Handbook for Women. Yes, thank you. And by the way, I did hear about you through the Moms on Mushrooms group, MOM group.
I love Tracy T. She's fabulous. Yes, Moms on Mushrooms is this great organization. It's really a community of moms, of course, and they are on mushrooms. And you can learn more about mushrooms through that organization. They do a lot of educational components, gatherings, and things like that. And some of that's online, some of it's in person. And I just think it's such a great organization to help reduce the stigma for moms who are interested in using mushrooms, because there's some parenting context there.
Oh yes, I'd say, well, if we're going to call the mushrooms the great mother or an element of the great mother that we get to interact with, then why not? And I think Moms on Mushrooms, there's a membership that you can join for a low cost, and it's really informative. So if you want to know more about this, please pick up Jennifer's book. It's amazing. It's a great read. I told her before we started the recording that there's parts of it that read like a novel, right? Like, my husband came and I was reading it, like, go away, I'm busy. I'm busy. I'm into it. So please buy the book and read through it. I think what we're talking about today is part of the human evolution to a kinder and more compassionate world. And, you know, there's a bigger conversation to have. Maybe we'll have it someday about how isn't it interesting that the mushroom information, the mushroom research and the usage is blossoming at the same time that women's health research, information, inclusion, the helpful people appearing now around hormone therapy and all of that, you know, I think
absolutely.
I don't think that's a coincidence that those two things happen together.
Pretty magical.
It is indeed. I love that. Okay. Final question I ask all of my guests, and I'd like to ask you today too, is this: knowing what you know now, what would you tell your younger self?
Oh my gosh. So many things. I have this thought all the time about thinking about what would I tell my younger self? And I think the thing that I would love to tell my younger self is, you're going to be okay. And this is something I could tell myself right now, but it's, you know, if I could have just told my younger self that, I would, you know, I know I would have had a different trajectory in some way, but maybe that's the beauty of not being able to talk to ourselves, is that we go through certain things and they teach us a lot of lessons, and we learn from those things, and then we are better people for it. And so it's not like I'm trying to throw silver linings into trauma or tragedy, but I do like to think of life that way. So yes, I would love to tell my younger self I'll be okay, just so I would know that going forward, but now I know it, so that's okay.
Wow. I love that. It's very touching, actually. Thank you for saying that. So if people want to know more about you, Jennifer Chesick, where can they find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on any social media channel. I'm at Jen Chesak. That's JenChesak. So that's my handle. I'm most active on Instagram as opposed to the other social media arenas. But so feel free to DM me if you have questions. I always try to answer those pretty quickly. I'm doing a lot of obviously podcast interviews, and I also do speaking engagements where I'm coming to psychedelic clubs or clinics, ketamine clinics, which are, you know, legal right now everywhere. So in the US anyway. So
yeah, doing too.
And so if somebody wants to book me for an event, you can just reach out, send me a DM, and I'll get back to you and we'll figure something out.
Oh, that's amazing. Listen, I've learned so much. Thank you for being the first to bring this information to the listeners of this longtime podcast. Thank you deeply. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. So fun.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you. The views and nutritional advice expressed by Dr. Fiona Lovely are not intended to be a substitute for conventional medical service. If you have or suspect that you have a medical problem, promptly contact your healthcare provider. No information offered here should be interpreted as a diagnosis of any disease, nor an attempt to treat or prevent or cure any disease or condition. As with any new advice or program, you should always contact your healthcare provider prior to starting anything new. Thank you.